Hi, and welcome to another Animus podcast. Today I'm going to be talking with the wonderful Ross Nichols. Great to see you, Ross.
Hi, Robert. Good to see you again.
So, I haven't seen you for a while, but I can never forget you. Because I always remember in training, you like to stand.
Yes.
Yeah. And tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, so the standing thing, there's two reasons for that. One is if I sit down for too long, I fall asleep. Secondly, I've got a bit of sciatica, and that aggravates it, so I like to stand up.
Cool, lovely. It always gave a really interesting flow to a weekend, just because it gave people permission to be in different spaces. Yeah. And I found that really interesting, really useful. Yeah. So what are you up to these days?
Oh, hang on, I haven't got a list with it. Well, I've got it written down here, but I couldn't read it out. But I suppose the three big things, the three strands that I'm working on, there's always business mentoring going on.
Okay.
There's always career coaching going on, and there's always well-being coaching going on. Those three things are often linked. So, for example, one of my clients at the moment, she's the CEO of a charity. She's based in London.
Okay.
And it started off as career transition. We're doing a lot of well-being stuff.
Okay.
And it's now morphing into business startup.
Ah.
So that's the three strands.
The three strands that kind of interweave.
They always keep emerging. And
lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. And is there a strand that sort of sits more favourably with you?
I think where my energy is at the moment, I'm increasingly drawn towards therapeutic coaching.
Okay.
And there's so much to that.
Yeah.
It brings together so many other things, for example, mindfulness, emotional intelligence, and simply the quality of being. The importance of being rather than doing is really fundamental to this.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So the importance of being as opposed to doing.
Mm.
So tell me a little bit more about sort of how that's sort of showing up in your practice.
It was a revelation to me, and I'm very grateful to Petra Vasileva, who's...
Ah, cool.
We met at one of the summits.
Okay.
We were chatting away, and she said, I think you should read this book. And she referred a book to me, which was called Dying to Be Me by Anita Mojani.
Yeah.
The story of a cancer patient who died and then came back.
Yeah.
Technically a near-death experience. And she brought back this incredible philosophy with her, which I really resonated with. And I thought, you know what, that summarizes kind of my view of what it's all about. But she packaged it up beautifully. And it illustrated for me the paradox of being versus doing. And in practicing this, I found this to be true, that the more I can let go of the need to do things, the sense of obligation, you must do this, you ought to do that, you should do the other, you need to do something, and just get into being mode, the more I get done.
Okay.
It's a paradox, but it's about being and just, you know, authenticity, being oneself and all the rest of it. But it's incredibly powerful.
Lovely.
And I bring that to everything I do as much as I can.
Okay. That sounds amazing, that notion of getting through the paradox. Because I can recognise what it means in my head. So cognitively I get it, to be more and to do less. But I recognise that in my being, in my nature, I want to do stuff because that makes it feel like I'm getting something done. So how do you enable your clients to get into that? Or, is there a tool or a technique or a practice that you might use?
Well, this is getting interesting. Through the cancer coaching community, I'm one of the co-founders of that, I've met some very interesting coaches, and one of them has written an academic paper on therapeutic coaching, which I'm absolutely fascinated by. And it brings together these strands of mindfulness, presence, emotional intelligence, and so on, but also something of the quality of being, which allows people to explore and address their deep side, the shadow side.
Okay.
And it's this being present to oneself, being fully present to oneself, acknowledging all these things. And there's 100 different tools and techniques for it. You pick the ones that are appropriate, which allow them to be fully present.
Okay.
And if they can be really present to themselves, they can see themselves and their shadow and their light sides, then they're more able to be.
Okay.
And let go of the need to do, and that's when the magic starts to happen.
So tell me a little bit about the shadow. The shadow side.
Shadow side's been a big part of my learning.
Okay.
I left the army at the end of 2008, after 26 years, which is, when I look back now, it's astonishing that I was in the army at all. I can't believe it. How did I do that? But I left for personal reasons. I couldn't do my job anymore. I had personal stuff to deal with. There was nothing noble about it. There was no battle shock. There was no post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
Just personal stuff from way back. And I went into what I call my black hole period for several years. And I started to explore this with alternative and complementary therapies.
Okay.
And one of the things that I really had to do was to get up close and personal with my shadow. And that's the scariest thing I've ever done.
So if you, how would you define, so if somebody didn't know what a shadow side was, how might you define that to somebody?
It's the thing that you don't want to think about.
Right.
The thing that you keep locked away, your dark side, your dirty little secret, the thing that you feel the most guilt, shame and fear about.
Right.
You just don't want to go there. Okay. You're not going to go there.
All right.
And it's that little thing which worms away, and it gradually somehow it comes out. And your outer reflects your inner.
Right.
If it's dark and horrible inside, your outer becomes dark and horrible. You will get sick, you'll get ill,
okay.
You'll be miserable, you may be suicidal.
Ah.
It can be very powerful and very dark.
Mm. So that notion then of when we can help a client address that shadow side through choice and look at it, then we can work with it as opposed to it finding its way out.
Mm. I think the best description I've come across for this, of how I do it, I'm not really quite sure how I do it, but I'm comfortable going dark and deep with a coachee,
okay.
The client. And the way I explain it is I kind of hold their hand as I walk with them to introduce them to their shadow.
Ah, interesting.
And it's about holding that space for them to feel safe enough to fall apart when they feel the fear and those strong emotions of guilt, grief, shame, fear,
yeah.
Anger. And simply, that old adage, knowledge dispels fear. Well, once you've actually got up there and been present to it and absorbed it, it's not usually so bad.
Okay.
And once you can see it, you kind of know what to do.
That's really interesting because Marcus has done a talk recently about, which he entitled Holding Hands with the Client.
Okay.
And that notion of being side by side and supportive and in that unconditional positive regard space,
yes.
With your client to enable them to look at those parts of themselves and to explore it and to experience it, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think the experience myself of having been on that journey to meet my shadow side through deep guided meditations and so on, not simply through coaching sessions, allows me to feel comfortable that I'm unshockable. I can't be spooked by what's coming up for me because I've been there.
Right.
I've seen the dark side. I've been to the dark side many times. And there's, you know, I'm okay with that. And so when somebody else is going towards their dark side for the first time, for their shadow, it can be a very frightening experience.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with that. And I don't think that many people are.
So that's really interesting. So having done that work on yourself enables you to be okay when somebody is doing that work with you.
Yes.
So that sort of calls to mind this notion for coaches to continue to work on their stuff in order to be present with their clients during those times.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely essential, particularly for the therapeutic coaching. It is essential. And we need to be not only congruent with ourselves, but we need to be able to recognise what's our stuff. And something you used to say in your coaching training sessions, you used to strike that actor's pose that you do and say, is that my stuff or is that the client's stuff? Okay, that's my stuff. I'm going to park that.
Yeah.
And this self-awareness,
yeah.
Self-reflection, presence, mindfulness, emotional intelligence, helps us to be fully self-aware and also to be accepting of our own stuff, our own emotions, our own thoughts and feelings that are going on in the session, and just focus on the client without the distraction of our stuff. We can just let it go and not be spooked by it. And if you're going dark and deep with a client, it can throw up strong emotions all around. And you will feel those if you've got the level of empathy needed to be a coach. You will feel it, and that can be spooky if you're not used to that,
if
you're not okay with that.
So would you say that a therapeutic coach needs more therapeutic skills or training? It's a bit of a close question
there. In very simple terms, yes. And I think you need to have done the work on yourself in order to be able to help others do the work on themselves, which is what the wellness and therapeutic coaching is all about.
Mm.
If you're not comfortable going to your own shadow side, then you won't necessarily be comfortable helping a client or a coachee go to their shadow side.
But which comes around to that sort of that congruent nature of coaching and that authenticity in the work that you're doing. That's amazing. Yeah. And that notion of having gone to, how long were you in that your black hole?
I think 3 years.
3 years. And so working with alternative methods to enable yourself to come out of that space. And then, so how did that lead to coaching for you?
Long story short, whilst I was working with various therapists, one of them said, have you ever tried business mentoring? I said, no. They said, well, there's an organisation around here. You should try as a volunteer. So I did. I was trying to figure out what to do with the rest of my life. So
right.
I gave it a whirl, and I loved it. And I was very quickly up to 9 different schemes and organisations I was business mentoring for, and the penny dropped. I thought, oh, I should do this.
Oh.
So I started my company, Business Mentoring Services Limited. And then a year or so later, I got a client referred to me through the voluntary scheme who didn't want mentoring at all. It was career coaching.
Okay.
And I said, look, I've got no training in this at all, but if you want to give it a whirl, I'll fly by the seat of my pants and we'll see what happens. And I loved it even more.
Oh, wow.
So I decided to train as a coach as well. And one thing leads to another. And I'm now pointing towards career transition, personal transformation coaching is, you know, one of my key offers.
Mm.
And the well-being coaching as well as the business mentoring. So these three things keep coming into play.
Yeah.
Quite often merge.
Wow. I always find it fascinating how coaches develop this merging way of working, because often when a coach starts, they go, well, I'm just going to do my coaching and I'm going to forget about all those other things. I'm always saying, no, see how you might bring those things together. And it's interesting to see that you've been able to do that really successfully.
I mean, we do obsess about what's our niche, and quite rightly to start, because you need to market yourself. But having read into it a lot, there's a great paper on the Animas Learning Zone. I can't remember the author's name, but it's about finding your niche.
Yeah.
It's a terrific paper. And basically he says, you don't find your niche, it finds you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's that part of that journey of the being and just, you know, following the energy, follow the trail of breadcrumbs, whatever they need. And eventually your niche will find you. And I think I'm stumbling towards mine.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's fascinating.
And I think there's something lovely to hear that you've been coaching a while now, but it doesn't feel like there's any panic or necessity to know your niche. You're quite comfortable.
That's right.
Exploring.
And again, it's something from the Anita Mojani philosophy. We don't have to make things happen. We allow them to happen.
Okay.
And this quality of being rather than doing, I'd like to tell you a little story, if I may, about...
Go for it.
Something which occurred to me last year. I went on the Business Accelerator course last year, down here in London, one Saturday a month for 6 months. So I wanted to make the boat go faster, and we all do. And about halfway through, I was getting very frustrated because having done an MBA and all this business stuff in the past, I know what to do. And I do this for a lot of my clients. I help them to do it. But I can't do it for me. And I was getting hugely frustrated. And so I just took myself off, sat down with a coffee one day, and I just let all this stuff go, all this sense of obligation that I need to be writing a business plan, I need to do this, I need to do that, I should do the other. So I let it all go. And when I looked up, I'd written an intuitive business plan. And I'm now using this with some of my clients, and they absolutely love it. And if you think about self-employed professionals and so on, people in the helping professions, coaches, therapists and so on, the business comes from the heart and the soul. It doesn't come from the head. So... rather like me, the concept of writing a traditional business plan, I'd rather go to the dentist. And I think most of them would too. But when I say, well, let's just work through these exercises and do the intuitive business planning. At the end of this, they say, well, there's a great exercise. When do we do the plan? I said, you've just done it. And then I've got a one page which pulls it all together. And they said, that's wonderful. I now know which direction I'm pointing, what I want out of this, and what I need to do to get there.
Yeah.
How cool is that? But it's because it comes from me being me, and I am a creator. I have a slight bias towards a creator profile. And by letting go of all this sense of, you've got to do it like this, you've got to write a business plan like this, absolute anathema to me, even though I know how to do it, something emerged that was new.
Yeah.
And it's pulling together lots of other things into an intuitive way And actually, I don't think I need a business. I don't have a business plan now. I just have an intuitive business plan. And it seems to be working. So, you know.
Nice.
Allow yourself to be.
Allow yourself. So this sort of reminds me of that notion of when we're coaching our clients, we're not making something happen. We're enabling
Absolutely.
A space for something to create itself or the client to create what they want to do. And that's where there's great strength and great motivation and power in coaching, because we're not doing it, we're allowing it to become.
Absolutely.
Nice, nice. I suppose one of the things I wonder here is, if you didn't have all of those business skills prior to the intuitive business plan, would the same, we can never know this, but I sort of wonder, is it, do those skills feed the intuition?
Quite possibly. I suppose it gives me the confidence to say, I actually know what to do with the traditional left-brain logical business plan. I've been through it hundreds of times with other people and done it for various organisations. So knowing it inside out, I'm not frightened of it. I can respect it. I can let it go and say, okay, let's just park that and see what happens. And if I didn't know too much about it, I might be distracted saying, well, maybe there's a bit of that I need to do. I need to do this, I need to do that.
Yeah, this reminds me of sort of new coaches learning models and getting very fixed to the model. And I sort of recognize there's a space where you use the model, you learn the model, you understand the model or the frame or the process. And at some point you go, now I can just do, or rather I can just be a coach. Yeah. As opposed to being a coach that follows a model, I can just be a coach and see what happens and where it flows, and maybe I'll tug on a bit of grow or a bit of toolkit and see where it sits with my client when it's useful, as opposed to sticking rigidly to it.
I think that's so true. And I think it was Peggy, I was on one of her training courses, she said, yeah, you've got to learn the rules. Once you've learned the rules, then you can break them.
Well, this reminds me of pantomime. Yeah. So in a previous life...
Behind you!
I worked in pantomime, yeah. And I worked with a Great Dane, Simon Thompson, and he said that in order to be a Great Dane, and to create chaos in a pantomime, you have to know exactly what's going on. Because otherwise you can't break the rules, and it's just madness. It isn't fun, it isn't humour, it's just chaos. And improvisers talk about the saying that you need to know the box and the rules so you know what you're breaking, as opposed to just messing about.
So what comes up for me when you say about, you know, the pantomime dame and knowing when to break the rules is, when you're in a coaching session, you're in deep rapport with the client and you really feel you're getting somewhere. Sometimes you just get this sense of knowing, this sort of sense of intuition comes up. And it's, I think there's an element of mastery of the process then beginning to creep into your coaching.
Yes.
Because you've got the competences, you follow the rules.
Yeah.
And then you can freestyle. You just know it's time to freestyle.
Yeah.
And the most exquisite question can pop out of your mouth. And that's when you get that aha moment. The client's eyes pop out. They go, that's it.
Yeah.
And you know that. You know that experience.
Yeah. And there is something about honing your practice that enables you to do that. So that notion of, if you're a coach but you don't have many clients, sometimes you can feel that you're always using models and it's quite clunky for you. But when you have that rush of, you know, 200 hours worth of coaching, you get to a point. So who is it that says this? There's a creativity thing they talk about. I think it's like 10,000 hours.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's the hours, but there's a conscious practice. So not of just practicing, but actually consciously practicing that gets you to that tipping point.
I think I'm some way off. But I do, excuse me. But I do practice reflectively.
Yeah.
As Nick suggests.
Yeah.
I use the ICF coaching competence, and I score myself after each session.
Nice, nice. So what does that give you that by, because I often talk about reflective practice, and I'm quite deeply entrenched in it from my creative background. And I'm curious about, what does that reflective practice bring for you?
It brings huge learning and insight. It means that if you've ever read the definitions of the coaching competence, and I'm sure you have, at the basic level, they're quite simple. At the top end, they're really quite mysterious. And by reflecting and reading them after each session, the the power and the subtlety begins and the richness begins to reveal itself. And there are so many little subtleties to coaching.
Yeah.
And also you realise the mistakes you're making, and so you can eliminate some of the errors.
Yeah.
And so, but usually when I think, God, was that session, I felt a bit clunky, and I look at it and I score it and I think, actually, it wasn't so bad. I was using most of the competencies.
Yeah.
Not in a conscious way. So when I'm I don't think, right, let's tick, you know, trust and rapport, coaching presence, active listening. We're not ticking boxes here.
Mm.
But if I'm in the flow of a good session, what I find afterwards was that I was naturally exhibiting those behaviours and competences.
Yeah. Yeah.
So being in deep rapport and having the intention and the mindset for coaching allows the competences to flourish, I think.
And one of the things that I often talk to new coaches about is to run your session, do your session, and then afterwards look at the models and go, which model was I using? Which bit of a model was I using? So you can just kind of notice what's showing up in your coaching as opposed to consciously going, I'm going to use this model right now. Mm. Nice.
Yeah, I think 90% of my coaching doesn't use any models consciously. And I think there's so much value in simply, you strike a coaching agreement with the client.
Mm.
Say, what is it you want out of this? And
yeah.
So on and so forth. And then you just listen. And occasionally, you just ask a little prompting question.
Yeah.
It's almost just toolkit. I mean, it's so simple, but it's so powerful.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, they'll say, God, that was amazing. And all you've done is sat there and listened, really, and nodded.
Yeah.
Really?
But without you, they don't have the space.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
But I think it's very easy to think, oh, I must have transaction analysis, I must have NLP,
yeah. Yeah.
I must have CBC coaching, all lined up, ready to go. But actually, 90% of the time, I don't use a model. Not that I'm aware of.
Mm.
It's simply really being present and really listening. Deep, deep listening.
So here's an interesting question. Or for me, anyway, as a trainer of models. Do you think we could get rid of those models?
Again, I think you need to learn the rules in order to break them.
Yeah.
So knowing those models, there are definitely times when you need them.
Mm.
And occasionally, when something's a bit technical, aha. We've got,
nice.
This is parent-child ego state.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
However, I'm simply saying that in my limited experience, 90% of the time, I'm not using consciously a particular model. I'm simply being present.
I think I remember talking with Carrie Brooks about coaching and models, and she was like, I don't use models. I just show up and allow it to happen. And she was aware that things like spacer was very present for her, but it wasn't a conscious I'm going to. It was just, that was a kind of way of working for her.
Mm.
And so I'm also aware that you do enjoy a CPD or two, a little bit of developmental learning. And to tell me a little bit about your love of CPD or love of learning.
It's just part of my journey. I'm not consciously following a path to get to a particular destination.
Mm.
It's just as each opportunity comes up, and I just think, is this for me or not? Does it call me or not? Yeah. And I've previously, my next one's the existential course in a few weeks' time, and I've previously looked at that. It's not for me. But I've got a client I'm working with at the moment, and he wants to go for walks in the countryside. So we go for walks in the countryside by the river, and we chat, and it's all about the meaning of life, and is there a God, and you know, what is spirituality?
Nice.
And I'm very comfortable discussing this stuff.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And when I read the spec for the existential CPD, I thought, you know, I need to do this course now.
Lovely.
So it's just arrived at the right time.
Nice.
Plus, of course, it's been run by Yannick. And I keep encountering his profile. So something says, yeah, it's time.
Time. I love that notion of, instead of planning what you're going to do, you just see what feels right.
Allow
yourself
to happen.
So
I think that's counterintuitive to our Western way of thinking.
Yeah.
But the more I can get in, let go of the need to do that and just to be, the more I can allow it to happen, and it seems to happen.
Brilliant. Wow. Awesome.
So it's a spooky way of doing business, isn't it? But it seems to work for me.
Well, it seems to be working.
Yeah, it suits me.
And in just thinking about business, if somebody wants to find you, wants to work with you, how do we go about finding you?
You could look up my website's either businessmentoringservices.co.uk or transitiontransformers.co.uk.
Awesome.
Or ask Animas. I'm sure most of the staff there have seen enough of me now.
Ross, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much.
Likewise, Robert.
Thank you. Cheers. You.